Welcome, welcome, welcome to an all-out cricket podcast. Yes, we have a full team back. If only England could say the same for the next test.
Ooh.
Oh, hello, it's Phil Walker.
Hello there.
Yes, it's Joe Harmon as
well.
Hello,
Ross.
And it's Alex O'Dell.
Last but not least, Phil, I enjoyed you on Sky Cricket Writers on TV yesterday.
Yeah, right.
I understand there's a story about you having difficulty in a taxi getting there.
Yes.
That is maybe something you can tell us about at some point.
Well, I can if you want.
Abridged version.
It was hellish, and I got there at 8:57 for a 9 o'clock start. They've been on for 10 years. They've never had a late one ever.
Ooh.
Not my fault, the fault of a taxi company that didn't pick me up and the fault of all those thousands of tossers who were cycling from east to west yesterday.
Yeah.
Causing untold damage.
What were they doing?
Did they not know?
To be honest, mate, my Sunday morning stuff, that's my bread and butter. I mean,
exactly.
this is what I live for, these shows.
The love of the big game. Phil, can I just warn you in advance, though, that I've listened to the show, and if you repeat any of the comments you made yesterday, I'm going to do like a klaxon, like a game show. Like, repetition, deviation.
No, that's fine. I mean, I can't remember anything that I said yesterday.
Right, fine.
It was all just a blur, a horrible, miserable blur.
Can I remind you, really enjoyable. Can I say how much I enjoyed it? First of all, you were great. And in particular, I enjoyed the fact that everyone was exulting in England's wonderful victory at Edgbaston.
Yes.
And, you know, trying to say, well, Finn played brilliantly and Bell did brilliantly. You know, what do you put this down to? And you, Phil, put it straight down to Farbrace putting Stokes at six.
Well, firstly, you're right. You're right. That was 4 minutes after I'd arrived. There'd been no notes, there'd been no discussion. I'd got no email, I'd got no brief, I had no idea what they were going to talk
really
about.
So this really was autopilot.
It was a clips package.
Batting six.
There's a sense of kind of monomania Stokes-wise with me. I get that. The point I was trying and failing miserably to make, firstly, he shouldn't have come to me for at least 15 minutes after the hell
to calm
of
down.
What I'd gone
through. Dried off. Told him
but
that.
What I was trying to get at, obviously, is that there's been a kind of sense of common sense, you know, that we've not really had with English cricket.
Good selections.
And, you know, the right blokes in the right position as picked by the right blokes in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
Balance, but no balance.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point, Ross.
Two sides of this. We have Phil going on talking about Ben Stokes batting a six as the reason, or one of the reasons behind this. Meanwhile, I have you tweeting me saying, can we possibly bring Chris Jordan in for him? To bat at six? Is he batting at six?
Yeah.
Chris Wokes?
Yeah, yes, he used to open for Surrey. Not with a great deal of success, I grant you. Not a great deal of success.
But this was when Finn was running through the Australians and you were focusing on how we can get Ben Stokes out of this side. I believe we're going to touch on this later in the programme.
We call him Mr. Accentuate the Negative. It's Alex O'Dell. Without further ado, let's kick off with a bit of tight analysis on the whole thing, shall we? Alex, what do you think of this? As England fly high, Michael Clarkey Clark admits he's still on the plane. Now, I've looked up still on the plane in the book of cricketing euphemisms. That's it. I had to look it up. And it's in between I'm not going to sit here and say, and to be fair to the lads, and it says, the captain is still on the plane. A captain has not scored enough runs to justify his position in the team, possibly also a man with a possible back strain and delusions of grandeur. So that's what it is.
It's funny, it reminds me of something immediately, Phil. I apologise. Because I really enjoyed yesterday on Sky Writers.
We need a klaxon for you as well. Right?
He's gone straight into, which is the Michael Clarke argument. And you said the thing about Michael Clarke
is
it's all good. So you say Michael Clarke is, you know, he's the talent, the brain, the great cricketer is there, but maybe his body's not up to it. And I immediately thought of Top Gun. That, you know, Michael Clarke's ego is writing checks and his body can't cash. So the argument you just made, Ross, I think we should refer to it as the Top Gun argument.
This is not my argument. This is Michael Clarkey Clark's argument. Yeah. He's the one. I just brought it up. I hadn't heard Captain. I had to look at the words, the captain has not got off the plane, for literally minutes before I understood what the hell he was talking about. It was a new bit of jargon, and I applaud Mr. Clarkey Clark for bringing us that.
Well done.
Any comments on that, guys? Michael Clarkey Clark?
Well, I've spoken too much about him.
Joe Harmon, your views.
It's kind of reminiscent of Ponting in 2010-11. He just looked like he was going to get out every time he batted. But with Ponting, I did feel like there's going to be an innings where he turned it round. With Clark at the moment, I just don't really see it. He does look like a walking wicket out there. And having him come in at four, it's just such a big thing for England. And knowing that Broad has got one over him many times. I heard there was mention, I think it was Warne was apparently promoting that Clark drop himself down to five, Sean Marsh coming at three, Smith go down to four. If you're a captain running scared, dropping yourself down the order, I think that just bodes very well indeed for England.
I know that's what the English press would say, but I could say that's an argument that I would give less weight to than the obvious advantage of having him back at five. I mean,
which
I know he's out of form,
runs,
but was it 60 at five and 30 at four?
Yeah.
I mean,
But you can't say his problems now are related to his batting position. He's looking so out of touch. Moving him to five isn't going to suddenly
Is this a Cook style thing where he just comes out of it in the end, or is his body broken? He's like, have you ever read Atherton's autobiography? Atherton describes the back pain and the dealing with the back pain and the corset and the steroids and all the different things that he had and the injections to deal with it. Now, is Clark in that territory? Is that where we are?
It's hard to say for sure, but that's probably how it appears. He's played loads and loads of cricket as well. You know, and if you think you've only got a certain amount of, you know, fuel in the tank, then he's played lots and lots of cricket. And his back's been buggered for a long time, for years and years and years. And it would be debilitating for him. That said, I fancy that he will get a score. In the last four innings of this tour, I fancy that he'll get a score. Not necessarily a match-defining one, But I just think he's too good a player, and he's shown that he's got balls as well over the years, and he's come back when he's been written off many, many times. So I'm not writing him off now, and I've always been a fan of Clark.
Isn't the difference between four and five largely psychological? I mean, with England, it makes absolutely no difference where you come in, be it four or five. We're usually three down to start off with.
Yeah.
Someone should blow a klaxon for that. Everyone's been saying that. But is it? I can't be that much difference between batting four and five in terms of the overs in which you generally come in at.
Well, speaking as a specialist number eight, I can't imagine there's any difference between four and five. Does anyone who's actually spoken to somebody who bats in those positions actually think there's a difference?
Most people, when you speak to them, they claim that batting positions don't matter that much.
They're liars.
Yeah, well, they are, and also they say it when it suits them. And Compton, for instance, I remember talking to him about opening when he was actually batting at three and making all those runs for Somerset. He said it makes no difference, but then obviously in that example it's in his interest to say so. Yeah. Bell's a funny one as well. Bell's always said he wanted a bat at three, then lost a bit of confidence, didn't quite fancy the role, balance gets it, and now he's left with no choice. And it looks like it's brought something out in him again, which I think is another, talking about good selection moves, that's a great one. And that's one that's come off perfectly.
That's what I should have said yesterday morning.
Yeah, that's good.
That right there.
I've written down, the bell still doesn't toll for Ian as he makes runs on his home ground. I wrote that, Al. What do you think of that?
It's excellent and original.
Klaxon time, maybe?
Yeah. So it's like deviation. In the first innings, when Ian Bell scored his runs, I thought, you have done the minimum necessary not to be dropped. That's how I felt about the in Bell first innings, which was then refuted by the second innings. But what I'm trying to say is the second innings was necessary for the first innings to have any significance. First innings only, if he'd scored a 50, I think the pressure would have still been on Bell. And so therefore that drop on 20 by Michael Clark takes on a certain significance. There's my glass half full.
I don't think they'd have dropped him unless they'd lost the Test match. I think he didn't need to do much to keep his place in a winning side. In a losing side, obviously, it's a completely different story. He batted beautifully until he played that ridiculous shot.
Bell critics would say, though, that
the classic innings,
they will always give him just enough time to just about stay in the team. That's the sort of the Bell phenomenon. That's why he averages, 43 after 100 odd tests.
He's a streaky player. He always has been. You know, when he's hot, he's brilliant. And when he's out of form, he's a walking wicket. And it's more extreme than with other players. But that's the trade-off for such a stunningly beautiful player. And a player who has proved himself now. You know, I mean, the notion that Bell is kind of, you know, this soft underbelly and all of that, sorry, bad pun. that's kind of blown out the water now with 2013. I mean, he will always have that streak in him, but then he's a middle order player, you know, and it's a trade off for me. That the way he got out was just hilarious. Classic Bell, you know. I mean, you cruise to 50 odd, you're back in the game. No England man's ever made 100. Warwickshire man's ever made 100 at Edgbaston. And then he goes and does that with about 2 minutes to go before, and the rain's already falling. It's just perfect bell. I love him for that.
Peak bell.
Does it every time. I imagine that was sort of the grinding, sort of heroic, casual success that really gets your goat and really inspires some anger within you, I'd imagine, Al. It's the sort
and
of thing you can really
joy
grab hold of.
And wonder in me.
Yeah. Well, no, I thought you were going to say perversely joy due to the anger, because they're very close
exactly,
to
aren't they?
With a cricket following. But never with Bell. Bell's never inspired that in me. I've always
that is surprising,
really liked watching Bell. I mean, I'd rather, sometimes he didn't do silly things like that. But there was a good point, and this is, again, going to be Claxon time, made about KP. If KP was playing in this England team now, all those criticisms, the amount of times that he would go out there and try and twat Siddle back over his head and get caught in just the worst possible time, those criticisms would fall flat. The game is changing and moving on in a brilliant way. So, no, not really.
Blimey.
I know.
Let's move on to another big talking point. Opening batsman. Let's talk about that. I have said that David Warner looks like a man who's carrying a 70s camera around with him in his pocket because he constantly looks like he's in the 70s. Not just because of his moustache, but because the quality of the skin on his face.
Well, he's doing a 3-day working week, eh?
Nice.
Very good.
Nice.
That is good. That's
it's
actually
funny,
a good line.
But it's
no,
clever.
But it's true. Adam's catching is live, but his batting is overzealous. Comments, please. Comments, Joe.
Adam Lyon with his pudgy Alan Shearer
I love
face.
How happy you are with that one.
I threw down my phone. iPhone notes.
I think we're approaching the 45-second self-congratulation barrier.
Yeah, that is good,
where we have to stop and move on. Adam Lyon, Joe Harvard.
I'm glad they've kept him in the side. I think if there was someone making mountains of runs in county cricket, it would be a hard case to justify, but there isn't anyone. I've had a lot of people tweeting me saying people like Tom Wesley at Essex, very talented player, played Division 1 cricket. Do you throw him in with two matches of National Series to go? I don't see it. Hales is another one who had amazing starts of the year but has gone off the ball a little bit since. As he's just tweeted himself the other day, how any player can stay in form when they're switching between four-day cricket to T20 the whole time and then into 50 over cricket.
Hales?
He's in the worst. People are saying Lyon's out of form, but at least he's playing five-day cricket. At least that's what his frame of mind has been.
Yeah.
That's not where Hales has been for a while now.
Hales, yet another England opener, playing number three. Yeah. I mean, that's the, you know, when we were talking about positions earlier, Hales has been at three, you know, Trott was number three.
He opened in a recent game in the county championship. But he hasn't been a consistent
hot
opener.
Hot off the press.
People are trying to band about names which just aren't going to happen, are they? Alex Lees, not in form, certainly not this year, and won't be in the team for a year or so, I would say. Mark Stoneman's come up. De Bell's touting around Nick Compton again.
Oh, of course.
Everyone's touting around Compton. I feel like there's a Compton train, not necessarily unfairly, because, you know, I'm fine with Compton, but more of a Compton train than a Carberry train, which is weird to me because when you look at the stats of the people they've jettisoned, Carberry stand out as consistently good in the worst, most difficult circumstances.
Has he got the best? He hasn't scored 200s, though, which is what Sam Robson and Nick Compton have done.
They both got the 100s, but they also had colossal failures. You look at Carberry down there in Australia, you know, there was never really that. But, I mean, Age was against Carberry, and he's also scoring no runs.
And neither of these guys, I mean, they're kind of averaging, I think Compton's about 40, Carberry's high 30s. It's really hard to make a case that those guys are a better pick than someone who scored 7 championship hundreds and a championship winning side last year. Yeah. Lyon's got it tough because he's playing against much better bowlers than he is in county cricket. Now, you can't just carry on saying that forever, but he should have the rest of this series. And then you go from there.
The old batsman's got a point, hasn't he, as well? Not easy to begin your career with Cook opposite, I imagine. I hate batting in my Sunday team with our captain. I just can't. I feel like he's judging me.
Are you judging me with the skipper?
Mm. Must be very, very, very hard, particularly in a situation, not criticising Cook, where Cook is not going to grasp the initiative early on. So maybe also with this positivity thing, there's also a little bit of pressure to be that guy.
I think that's true. I think it certainly was something levelled at Nick Compton at the time, that if you bring him back in, it gets all a bit stodgy at the top of the order. I don't know whether that's particularly true. I think a lot of people have said, and I'm completely up for that at the moment, I'd love a stodgy English batsman at the top of the order. Another one. And I think that could put us in really good stead. But Lyth deserves his chance, absolutely.
We saw a little glimpse of what Lyth can do in the second innings at Cardiff. I think he scored 37.
Didn't he look great?
And he scored really fluently. And at that point, where he looks like we're in trouble, it looked like we were going to have that that kind of collapse that you go from a winning situation to a losing situation. And the way he played, suddenly that lead stretched. And you did see the advantage of having someone at the top of the order who can play like that. Mm. He just needs to find a bit of form, but I think to jettison him now.
He's very much in the hugs, nice. And I look for that as a positive sign. You know, when you look at them celebrating a wicket, you want your guy, even if he's not in form, to be very much in the middle of all those incredibly soft high fives that they do.
Yeah,
you know,
the
very gentle ones.
You want him in a big hug.
I want him in there. I want him in the hugs. He's in and amongst it,
although,
isn't he, like?
Did you see Finney stand on his foot?
Did
really?
He?
Oh, when he took his first wicket, there was a lot of jumping up and down. He stood right on his foot, ran away wincing. And then you've got to question whether they do want him in the side, or they're just going to be assaulting him in the huddle.
Yeah, that kind of body language says a lot.
We've stumbled on another klaxon, ladies and gents. Phil, what do you think of this? Australia spot England's Finn a little too late and get chewed up and spat out before they can kick their legs and get out of the water. What do you think of that?
Seven.
Yeah, that's generous. But Finn was back with a bang, and I really did think the curse of the All Out Cricket Diary was going to strike once and for all for Finney. Dear old Finney with his Finney's Diary. But he looked absolutely back and in great form, didn't he?
I got a text from him the morning after. Not impromptu. He wasn't just kind of thinking, right, I've got to get back in touch with Phil. He might have been impromptu.
He wants his diary back, and who can blame him?
Thanks, Phil. It's been a manic few days. Appreciate the message. See you soon, mate.
What was your message?
Which is quite a great response to, I love you, Stephen Finn.
Genuine, it was. My text was full of capital letters.
Was it sexting, essentially?
Stunning scenes, thrilled for you here from all of us at AOC, etc. And look, thrilled with capitals as well.
That's good.
It gave me more pleasure than I think I've seen any other England kind of individual resurgence in years and years and years. Mm. It was really, really great because of how miserable it had got for him and to how wonderful it suddenly became. And I know that I'm repeating myself, and I said all this yesterday morning, and Alex is already going.
In all fairness to you, I think every single person in the country, I would just wish one person in the country was like, I met Steve Finn once, he was a dick.
OK, we'll talk about the bowler. When you lose your big Jimmy, it can be an affront to your manhood, but luckily, England has still got wood. Joe Harmon, what do you think about that?
That is our acceptable.
Eight and a half.
That's an eight and a half, isn't it? That is good, isn't it?
I prefer the last one.
Well?
That one was smutty.
I don't think he got it.
You don't?
No, I didn't. I'm working it through.
Listen, there's a lot of people out there. Suddenly, England do seem to have loads and loads of bowling options. People are throwing in Rushworth, Jack Brooks. Jordan not making it in there, unfortunately, although we mentioned him earlier. Oh, yeah, sure. Chris Wokes. All sorts of players been bandied about. It's Footit and Plunkett that have made the squad.
Do you know if Wood plays, then it's the fewest number of letters in the history of all England Test cricket.
That's brilliant.
Is a stat.
That is a stat.
Thanks to Benedict for
it
that.
It is Benedict from Sky Sports, but how does he work that out? Mm. And can anyone ever disprove him without going through every scorecard?
Is that an accident? Has he kind of, has that come up on, he's got some sort of Word document he puts in players that he likes, and somehow that's just come up?
I don't know. He's a friend of the magazine. Or
I'd
love that to be an impact on policy when they're absolutely torn between two players. I'd like,
you're looking at Rushworth and thinking, that's a bit.
That's going to cost us.
That's too many letters.
We're going to stick with Ali. Yeah. We're going to stick with him.
Because that is a real letter winner in the minus column. I think it looks like Wood would play. The conditions apparently in Trent Bridge don't swing as much nowadays, but he does seem to be the type of bowler for the occasion.
It was dead as a dodo,
there, hasn't he?
Against India?
It
was dead as a dodo in 2013 against Australia when Anderson pulled it out of the bag on a flat pitch. Mm. So it's probably going to be dead as a dodo, isn't it? Then who'd you pick?
But they'll leave a bit of grass on it, I'm sure. Wood will, if Wood's fit, he'll play. In fact, actually, there was interesting stuff from Bayliss saying that he quite fancies Wood to take the new ball, which isn't what you'd expect. Finn bowled so well, you just assumed it was a no-brainer that Finn would take it with Broad. But Bayliss said he's done a good job when he's had the chance for Durham, and they quite fancy him taking it.
To me, that makes sense. Yeah, because Finney is quite fragile, and suddenly it's weird how pressure works. And suddenly now all eyes are on Stephen Finn. He's now seen as the new saviour, the Anderson elect, and so on. And now he's going to be in that position where suddenly there's an expectation that he's going to perform. He's not he's not ready yet to shoulder that kind of burden. And so if you throw him the new ball in the big one, in essentially the decider, I would be minded to throw it to Mark Wood, who's, you know, he's a likely lad, he fancies it, he's just going to get up there. You know, he has more control than Finn, if you look at how he's gone in the last 6 months, Wood. You know, he bowls one side of the wicket, he's bowled with real good control. In a way that Finney doesn't have a history of doing. I would leave Finn first change, yeah. Take a little bit of pressure
they
off his shoulders.
They can't waste it. That's the thing as well. Like, all of these wickets, even against New Zealand, you've got to get in at the beginning. If you don't, you're in real trouble.
Yeah.
So they'll go with the accuracy. The other thing is, Cook has finally abandoned whatever policy it was where he gave a set amount of overs to the two openers. So he was whisking off quite quickly.
Came in seventh over, which was a really good call from Cook as well, yeah. Because the last thing you want, Finn, first test match in a couple of years, is just waiting. So he brought him on early. And then it's great because you can bring Broad back in. Also, I don't have any stats to prove this, but it doesn't feel like Broad takes many wickets with his first spell. Anderson is usually the one who gets the breakthrough. Broad's the one who comes back and takes wickets in the middle.
Yeah.
So that makes see what it's doing with Broad for a few overs and then get Finn into the attack. And then you can kind of rotate your seamers, because Stokes didn't even get a bowl in the
first. I hope no Australians are listening.
Is the plans coming out.
Yeah, also showing admirable control, I think, is Ben Stokes. Benjamin yes. Stokes. Born Christchurch, grew up in Cumbria, moved there aged 11, son of Jed Stokes, and a mighty fine cricketer in my opinion. Considering he was a five and over merchant, you know, when he first came in, constantly riding the line, trying to bowl magic balls, etc., etc., I think he's actually bowled with smarts and nous, certainly more than he showed initially, to kind of do that role of being the fourth, fifth seamer. And not just being a kind of wild card that you can't really rely on, but to actually come in and do a decent job. Well, I think he's still developing, but that's how I'm seeing it.
You know, it was a big wicket. This is going to sound like I'm taking
the Hazelwood wicket.
The Hazelwood wicket was a huge wicket.
Great catch. Mm-hmm.
That was maybe the difference between a relatively easy chase and a nasty chase. It was a great catch, as you say.
Even better that he kind of fumbled it and then somehow managed to recover as
yeah, it was an absolute rocket. But that was a big wicket. And, you know, Stokes took it. He's averaging 99 with the ball, this Ashes series, which I think suggests that he basically, since he is bowling well, every time I watch him, he looks like he's bowling well. He's either doing the role with the softball, which is definitely having an impact on his averages, and he's also not getting any cheap wickets. He's got the opposite syndrome to Finn.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just impossible to get a cheap wicket.
Bell dropped Smith off Stokes at Lords when he was on 50. He's had that spell at Lords as well. He beat the bat a number of times. He's not really had any luck, but he's not going to finish up with an average around 30, 32, just like, you know, many decent all-rounders through the years have not. You know, if he can finish up with an average between 35 and 40 with the ball and get up to somewhere around 100, 150 wickets, then he's done well for what he is as a bowler. It's as a batsman that he stands out.
No, I think it'll be interesting when we get over to the UAE. We're not even going to go anywhere near it, but it's going to be really interesting what they have to do once they go get that second spinner.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll come. We've got plenty of time.
Stokes is bowling, as Phil said, with Smarts and Nous. And Smarts and Nous, if people don't know, they're a northern comedy duo.
Smarts and Nous.
Anyway, in the next section, we're going to talk about South Africa versus Bangladesh.
We're not really.
No.
But they both rained off. They're in the monsoon season.
240 for 8 in 88 overs on day one, bubbling away quite nicely. Not another ball bowled in four days.
Extraordinary.
Monsoon season in Dhaka. But, you know, the ICC in their infinite everlasting wisdom.
Yeah.
And that was after having the India test washed out again. Was that one innings each washed out after day three?
Yeah, that one wiped out as well.
It's a shame because Bangladesh, really as strong as they've ever been probably, and doing really well against South Africa, and looked fantastic in the first test. I thought they were going to win it, and then the rain interrupted. It's a real shame. I actually hadn't intended to get into this. I was going to go into something else, but here we are. It's such a rich... But no, I was going to go on to this. Have there ever been a combination of more underwhelming batting coaches than Ramprakash for England and Devanuto, who seems to be all over the Australian batting coach setup?
What's underwhelming about Mark Ramprakash?
What's the problem with Devanuto?
What is underwhelming? Oh, I've got to answer that question. What is underwhelming? Neither have done well at international level.
Well, no. Mark Ramprakash notably failed, but looked classy. Devanuto, did he play much at international level?
He played some one-day international.
He played some one-day international.
Jose Mourinho wasn't much of a footballer.
Interesting. we go back to the whole coaching basically being about sort of hand-holding and whispering and being one of the lads.
And Ram Prakash, probably the most perfect technician to have played English cricket, in English cricket, if you like, for the last 20 years. And obsessive over technique. He's also, he's not going to be a man management, really, Ram Prakash, but he is going to say, you know, your backlift is a split second too late. As, for example, funnily enough, we saw, I think it was Atherton did a really good bit on the telly about live versus Root and about the setup. And if you look at Root's setup, it is God-given. It is genius, Root's setup, enabling him to get all the way forward, all the way back. He's on his toes. And if you watched this little clip of live, by the time he's in position to play the shot, and I'm doing the moves here,
I can see
the bat is just coming up that split second too late. And so the ball that Hazelwood got him with, LBW, just wasn't coming down fast enough. And it's not necessarily that he's not seeing it. It's not necessarily a reaction thing, but it's a pickup thing. Now, Ramps is probably better qualified than anyone else in English cricket to identify those kinds of things because he's lived it and breathed it for 25 years. Now, also, if Athers, Nasser, Strauss, etc. were minded to get involved, then, you know, they'd give him a run for their money. But they take the, you know, the cushy jobs.
Yeah. Graham Hick over in Australia.
Yeah.
Who's he coaching?
He is coaching Australia under-19s who are coming over here in... Well, they're playing today or tomorrow. So he's their coach.
Interesting.
He'll be very good, I think.
Is he over here then? Here?
Yeah.
Oh, we might have to go in.
No, we talked about this last week. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, the Hickster. A little bit of inside info there. It's like a hidden microphone show, that wasn't it? About the inner workings of All Out Cricket.
Well, it's interesting about that trigger movement because I watched the Ricky Ponting Sky Masterclass thing. And Ponting did this just really interesting thing about the fact that he used to, his front foot would be hovering at the point of release.
Yeah.
And he knew when he was out of nick, his foot would have planted. And that's why he had all those LBWs.
Yeah, Bell does the same. God, this sounds really ridiculous, but I played a round of golf with Bell once. It was when he was on his, when he'd been kicked out after Jamaica, 2009, I think, and we were at this kind of like pro-am thingy or whatever, and I paid loads of money to do it, and obviously he was invited along, and we were in like the car, and we were talking about that, and he was talking about the hovering, floating front foot thing, and I'd never heard that term before. But he was saying you have to be on your toes as a batsman. And he was actually talking about it in regards to golf because he struggles because with golf you need to be on your heel and in cricket you need to be on your toes. And you see that with Ponting. He's just kind of took it to that extra kind of level. But it makes total sense. You know, you can't commit on that front foot because then you start playing around front pads and so on and so on. Root is the same. If you look at him, he's on his tiptoes all the time. It's why he's got that incredible cut shot, which he's just added to his game where he rolls up right on his tiptoes and he knocks it through there. Yeah, we're at the risk of getting technical corner here. But
is that what you're supposed to do, be on your toes?
I don't like the sound of that.
What you're supposed to do.
I went to
this is what Bell was saying.
Surrey game a few years ago, and Matthew Maynard was standing on the boundary. He was working with some young player, and it was like he was doing ballet. It was bonkers. I don't think you saw him go onto his flat foot the entire time. The guy was giving chucks downs to Matthew Maynard, and Matthew Maynard was like, what's the thing in ballet when they go right up on their toes, like a thing? Like, it was just constant. He was never down, and it was constant movement as well. And it was eye-opening. And I've tried to apply these principles in my own game.
You're quite influenced by darts in general, aren't you, really?
That's right. That's right. By darts.
Yes, by darts and dance.
Well, that's the kind of high-quality humour, wordplay, wordsmiths that you can expect on the show.
Sorry
for doing the technical thing.
No, that was good.
It's totally cool. The technical thing's totally cool.
That's cool.
That's cool, man. There's room for so much here. It's two games in the pop life, much like David Warner and the rest of the Australian team.
Very much an open tent.
What Warner always looks two like games. Rick Moranis when he's been taken over, if you like, or when he turns into the grizzly monster.
He looks just like him.
He's got the same kind of shaped body.
Yes, he does. And if you put some Rick Moranis glasses on David Warner,
that's a
competition. If you can put on David Warner's face, if you can go up to him and put some Rick Moranis glasses on the face.
A year's subscription.
To AFC.
This a challenge to you, listener.
Oh, it's been a very fulsome pod blast. God, it's been good, hasn't it, Phil? You've enjoyed it, haven't you?
It's been right up there.
It's been right up there, hasn't it? Have you got it right up there, Joe?
I've really, really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, that's very good. So I want to talk about the greatest innings. Is that what it's called? Fill me in.
Yeah, something like that. our estimable magazine is out on Thursday. It's really good. And the key thing, it's England's greatest ever test innings.
Ooh.
Right, we put a panel together of 35 people, I think, all of whom know their cricket inside out.
We weren't invited.
Many of whom you'll know the names of.
Yeah.
Put them all together, got them to vote for their top 10 innings. Yeah. Post-war, okay? And from Botham's 6-ball 18 in 85, Edgbaston to Gooch's 333 and back, 25th anniversary of Gooch's 333, what gave us the idea for it. And we've crunched all the numbers and revealed in the magazine the top 20, and then from there the actual top 10, and finally the greatest innings ever played.
Ooh.
Did anybody go for Graham Thorpe 93 Test Bridge debut?
Test Bridge?
It was
Test Bridge. Do you know?
I know the one. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. When he hooked it over Michael Slater's head.
I don't even remember that. All I remember is just thinking, because England were so awful, they were being trounced so much, and then there was this new guy on debut, and he was like playing.
It did get a couple of votes, but it didn't make it in. It didn't make it into the top 20.
I mean, it's not the greatest.
One thing I want to add to this: the Jazz is running and running here.
It's running and running.
Every decade from 1945 to 2010 onwards is represented in the top 10, which is a nice touch, I think.
That's quite nice. Did you have some older generation judges then that could remember it?
Yeah. Mm. David Frith, kicking on through the 70s, maybe even 80-odd. He was in there, but a number of old esteemed dudes as well as some young whippersnappers.
Lovely.
That's true. You don't have to be able to have an old... Some of my favourites are distinctly pre-war.
Yeah.
6th of August, listener. All Out Cricket Magazine is out.
Yeah,
6th
bang
of
on.
August.
Bang on.
WH Smith. So you can contact us.
No, he's not in it.
Name your own. Yeah, he was in 1938, just pre-war. He did a lovely little innings at Testbridge.
You can contact the Pod Blast. You can contact us using social media, digital electronic communication devices,
astral projection, mental telepathy, and tweeting.
At Cricket Pod Blast, at All Out Cricket. Thanks for listening.
Tweet us.
See ya.